Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Continuing our Discovery coverage with episode 12 of season 1. Called Vaulting Ambition. It was written by Jordan Nardino, directed by Hanel M. Culpepper. It aired back on January 21st, 2018, or it became streaming available on that day. In this episode, Burnham heads to the ISS Karen with a special gift for the Emperor. With help from an unexpected source, Stamets gains clarity while trapped inside the mycelial network, and Saru asks Laurel for help. We're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I feel like I know everything about everything now because this was 38 hot minutes of exposition.
Yep.
Letting us know where we stand. Yeah, it's all just, I mean, after 12 episodes of setup, we're finally going to have something happen, I guess, at least until next week. So this is going to be an interesting conversation, I think, because I think this episode is kind of a make or break for your opinion on the show.
Sure.
And
there was an episode that we thought that a couple episodes ago. I don't remember specifically which one it was.
I feel like this one is like, I feel like they've put enough cards on the table here where it's like you're either with what's going on or you're not.
Yes. I think that we're past the point of no return for is the show going to be different, sort of. Like, is it ever going to change? I think we're past that point, but... I guess we'll start off by, before we go to the break, I'll say, do you know what Vaulting Ambition is from? Pop quiz.
Vaulting Ambition?
Yeah, it's a
I don't know.
It's a Shakespeare quote. It's from Macbeth.
Oh, well, that's at least consistent with the history of the show.
Right, it's on par with the quality, similarly. It's from Macbeth. The quote is, "I have no spur to prick the sides of my intent, but only vaulting ambition which overlaps itself and falls into the other." What he's talking
about. I was going to say, that sounds like an ethos for the show, which is we're going to try to do everything and then possibly not accomplish anything.
Yeah, we're going to overextend our reach, basically, is what Macbeth is talking about. And he's
right,
not sure
yeah.
what's on the other side. Just for a pop quiz, it's from Macbeth. It's Macbeth trying to monologue his rationalization of killing King Duncan. He's talking about he has no sort of. He has no reason to kill Duncan, so he doesn't have a spur to prick the intent of killing him, but his vaulting ambition is what's driving him to do it. Mm-hmm. And the Emperor refers that to Lorca in this episode. But anyway, we're going to play an audio clip, we're going to come back, and we're going to break down vaulting ambition.
Lords of the Empire, privileged guests, all hail her most imperial majesty, mother of the fatherland, overlord of Vulcan, dominus of Kronos. Regina Endor, all hail the Emperor, Philippa Giorgio Augustus Eoponius Centaurius.
All hail the Emperor!
Emperor, I present to you Captain Michael Burnham of the Imperial Starship Shenzhou.
Captain Burnham, a face I thought I'd never see again in the flesh.
All right, so this was a short one. It was only 38 minutes of TV, which is funny.
I believe I looked it up, or I just caught it in passing. It's the shortest episode of Star Trek ever.
Yeah, it would by probably a great margin, I would have to assume. Discovery might have the other previous record holder if they ever had an episode that was less than like 42 minutes.
Yeah,
Vaulting Ambition is... Well, it set us up where we are now with the Emperor. We're sort of fully ensconced into this mirror universe. We've had another big reveal come along. We've had Burnham spending time with Emperor Georgiou. We've had Tilly, Stamets, and Saru hanging out on Discovery. And Stamets has met his double in the mycelial network. So... where do you want to start with this? You seem to have a bigger... Maybe bone to pick is the wrong word, but you have a stronger opinion about this one, judging by we interacted on Twitter last night, kind of cryptically. And where do you want to start with this, I guess, is my question.
Well, You know, I was, after I watched it, I was looking at some of the reactions, and maybe I shouldn't be doing that, I don't know. And I was getting mostly the stuff that you were, you always talk about, where it was nothing but high praise about how brilliant a twist this was.
Never saw it coming.
Yeah, and someone mentioned that people who don't like it are just not used to see it. This is a Star Trek novel writ large, and people are just not used to seeing literary devices like foreshadowing stuff used in a TV setting.
Yeah, sure.
And like, I don't know what show these people are watching, because like I didn't hate it, but I did. So first of all, I don't really think that they're playing fair in this episode.
They're not. They are. I'll interrupt you just to say, they are twisting the mirror universe to be whatever each character needs it to be.
Yes. First of all, it's in terms of playing fair. I don't think that they play fair with the Lorca reveal at all, and I don't mean that in a way that they're like twisting it in a consistent way with the way they've handled things before. Like, I think that they actively are throwing the audience a curveball that doesn't work if you look at what they do.
So what do you by the entire Lorca reveal, you mean, or
specifically that episode? Right, there's the scene where they have the scene where the bald guy brings in Lorca's friend and kills him, right?
Yeah.
And Lorca plays that scene, or Jason Isaac plays that scene, and that scene seems to be written for the audience intentionally to see that Lorca doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yes. He's maintaining his charade at that
right.
point. Yeah.
Why?
Because the reveal hasn't happened with Burnham yet, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's a writing choice by the hand of God of the writer of the show. It's not consistent with the action that's happening, because there's no reason that he would need to pretend that he doesn't know what this guy's talking about, because there's nobody in that room who doesn't know who doesn't know that he's fake or whatever.
Right.
You know, there's no reason for him to keep that up, except for the benefit of the audience. And I personally find that to be dirty pool.
I thought he was going to bait that captain by telling him who he really was, and that was going to like enrage the guy to pull him out of the agony booth.
Yeah,
and like, and then they'd have their little fisticuffs, but that's not what's happened. I mean, I'm torn, because I think that the Lorca stuff is better than the Voke or Vok. I think it's pronounced Voke, and we've been pronouncing it wrong.
You mean that other plot thread that we've been teasing out for an entire season that they seem to have just swept under the rug again?
We
haven't seen what happens next episode, but they seem to play it off as though Laurel fixes Tyler after like touching his brain for a minute, and then she does her Klingon death yell, and they do a flashback montage of Vok, which I'm assuming they're trying to imply that Vok is now dead.
Yes.
And gone.
Yes.
So what are we doing here? What has any of this been for?
That's the big problem with that one. Like, the I'll get to that. I'll finish the, because there's a lot going on here. I think that the thing about the Lorca reveal is that I feel like the Lorca stuff is Lorca's storyline compared to the Voke Tyler storyline was better foreshadowed. Like,
yes.
I think that the Lorca stuff holds up on its own. Like, it if you go back and you watch it, there was some little clues. He was acting weird. I still think it's less predictable than the Voke reveal was, but it's still, yep. you might get a few more people than you got with the Voke thing than you would with the Lorca stuff, which I think is fine. I think that they laid the last three or so episodes, they've been showing a lot of like the camera lingers on Lorca as he like smirks to himself, and it's like, I wish they weren't doing that, because that's obviously hinting that he's mirror universe Lorca.
Yeah. No, I like the concept. I think it was, you know, fairly well done for the most part. But again, I don't know how clean it is.
No.
You know, I think it's a better, so much better idea than the Voke thing. I'll tell you that much. Which, in retrospect, I was thinking about that again when I was watching it last night. They went through so much trouble to have Clem Fandango. Sorry, that's from Toast of London. The guy that plays Ash Tyler plays a character named Clem Fandango.
Oh, sure.
The only other thing I know him from. to play Voke, and they created this fake other actor to throw people
Akbal
throw people off the scent. When, if you think about it, there's no reason why those have to be the same actor at all.
No.
Why even bother doing that?
Because
I'm almost positive they were two different actors last episode when they were interacting with each other.
Sure.
Which kind of takes away the entire, like, why even bother doing that except to set up a mystery that people solved immediately because you're going out of your way to make it twisty and weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Maybe the only thing I can think of is maybe there's some kind of contractual obligation there where they can't pay another person to play that character or something, but
I mean, sorry, I was just gonna say the only thing I could think of is if, like, his name is in the credits, he has to be in X number of episodes or some shit.
Yes.
Like that, I don't know.
Right, yeah, maybe something like that. And I think that his, I mean, that whole, I don't know where they're going to go with that, but that whole plot line seems to have become totally pointless because he accomplished nothing in this entire trip. And it also is extremely confusing about what they did to him to make him that character.
they've been trying to explain it for three episodes, and every time they do it, he gets more confused.
Why? I was like, okay, they physically, previous to this episode, I was like, okay, they physically turned the Klingon into a human. They basically did plastic surgery on a Klingon and turned him into a human. This episode seems to imply that it's Tyler's body that they put the Klingon brain into. And if that's the case, why did they have to shorten his limbs? Why did they have to do all that stuff?
I don't know. They've every time they explain it, they explain it differently, and it becomes more confusing. And it's, they spend so much time explaining this, and it doesn't matter.
No,
like that.
No.
That aspect of the story, I could give less of a fuck about. You know, it's like if you had just said, yeah, he is Vok, he's been changed into Tyler. That's all you need. You don't need to explain it.
I think, I mean, the easiest way is just we put his mind into a body. If you had just done that from the start, I'd be like, that's fine. I think we even talked about, like, why didn't they just do that from the start?
Right.
What's the point
right.
of this?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, and I assume that character is dead, or what, dead in the sense of whatever dead means in this universe, because he gets the death yell from Laurel. Mm-hmm. He is talking to Kayless as he's dying, and then he goes from speaking Klingon to English, which I assume is to imply that the Klingon aspect is dead at this point.
I didn't point this out last episode because it didn't occur to me until I listened to the episode back when you put in the clip of Ash Tyler.
When he's talking, morphing, yeah.
No, talking in Klingon,
yeah.
Using his Vok voice.
Yep.
His Vok voice sounds a lot like a stereotypical Indian Native American voice.
Well, the eagle does soar high for
It was that exact kind of accent. I was like, oh, that was an odd choice.
It's a very short story. I just took a screenwriting class in college, and it was like it was outside of like school hours. It was like a night class type thing. And a middle-aged woman was a part of the class, and she wrote this like incredibly erotic romance screenplay, but one of the characters was a Native American, and he was just so stereotypically Indian, and people couldn't stop laughing while she was reading the script. But anyway, back to this. The Vok thing, well, at least they didn't put them in the same cell for too long. We'll give them credit for that. I don't know. I mean, this obviously gives them a way for the Tyler character to rejoin the show on some level.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Which is great. So we'll have a lot of Burnham and him hashing out their differences, and then we'll move on from there. But I think that the episode itself is really a lot of
talking.
A lot of talking and a lot of explaining what is going on.
A lot of talking and a lot of explaining. And it's another episode where we're getting they're explaining everybody's relationship in the mirror universe because they don't want to show us anything or keep anything intriguing because they have to move so quickly through all of their plots that there's no time for anything to breathe. So Georgiou has to talk for 15 minutes about how she raised Burnham, and it's just and it's all in service of getting to the Lorca thing. It's like a perfect summation of the thing that we've been talking about the last couple episodes, where it's like they're so excited about their clever twist,
yeah,
that they're just doing as much as quickly as possible to get to it.
And yes.
It's just I don't know. I just it's not for me.
I think that the going back to like what we were talking about, the mirror universe being unfair, sort of, or I think that the mirror universe is being unfair. I might have been misinterpreting you, but the mirror universe here, I'm not familiar enough with the DS9. I haven't watched the DS9 and the Enterprise mirror episodes recently enough to really get any good conclusions out of this. So a lot of my mirror universe stuff is based on the TOS universe, which is makes sense because this is happening before TOS is happening. So
right.
That feels to me like the closest timeline. Like things should be like the mirror universe in this, the TOS mirror universe in this show.
Mm-hmm.
And the mirror universe to me here, I think we've talked about the longer they spend in the mirror universe, the worse it becomes from a writing standpoint, because
yeah.
You start to wonder, how the hell does this universe make any sense? Like, how does it actually operate on itself? And the more characters that interact with their doubles, the more it reveals that it's not really a mirror universe. Like, they aren't perfect. The show takes liberties with what differences are and what differences aren't between the universes.
Yes.
So it's like, in our universe, this is a big difference. And so you just have to ignore the fact that this has not happened in your universe. My understanding is that everything is basically a exact double, except for the fact that some things, like you might be in different situations, kind of. Like, so it's it's weird. Like, it needs to be more of a, the only thing that's interesting about the mirror universe is that you can look at yourself through the mirror and you see something. But that's not the case for Burnham, because she hasn't met her double, who I think is dead. Everyone seems to be saying that she's dead.
That's a really good point, yeah.
And Stamets talks to his double, and his double just seems to be a slightly snarkier version of the regular Stamets.
Yeah.
And Lorca, we haven't met his double. And Georgiou...
presumed dead.
Yeah, Georgiou is... You know, they're selling this Burnham thing as if... We talked about this last episode... Michael Burnham should have no feelings for this Georgiou. She brings it up. She's like, logically, I shouldn't feel anything, but who knows?
Just don't forget she's a Klingon.
Right.
Or something.
But also,
I'm sorry, Vulcan. Sorry, Vulcan.
The fact that they've changed the backstory so that it's not what happened in the Prime Universe should almost separate Burnham from this Georgiou. They still have a mother-daughter relationship, quote-unquote, but in the mirror universe, it's much more obvious of a relationship. Like, it's... She, like, literally seems to be her adoptive mother. Sarek doesn't exist in this world. Or he does, but he doesn't have that role. So, it fails the writing on a level where I'm not gaining anything about the Prime Mirror Burnham, because you're changing stuff when she gets into the mirror universe, and there's nothing for me to cling on to be like, oh... this is what the character is learning about in this world. It's all just made up, and it doesn't have any relevance to this character of Burnham for me.
Yeah, no, you bring up a really good point, which is the point of the mirror universe is to show you a different, like a mirror version of the character that you know, usually so the prime character can learn something about themselves or, you know, see how things would be different. But everybody that we meet in the mirror universe is dead.
Yeah.
There's no one to bounce it off of.
Right.
Like, there's no... We don't have a mirror Georgiou. And even if we did, the Emperor Georgiou is just, like, kind of a fine, really. Like, she's... I have to admit, I was kind of surprised that the way that Burnham got out of that situation she was in was by just straight up telling her exactly what was going on.
Right.
And then Georgiou to be like, you know what?
I believe you.
Cool. Yeah, I believe you. And yeah, I'll help you. No problem.
Same with...
And like at the... And when they're on their way out or whatever, and I mean, this might just be a setup for a backstab later on or something, which, you know, I'm sure it probably is.
Yes.
But, when she's like, you have my word, And Burnham's like, well, is that worth anything? And she's like, well, was it worth anything in your universe? Like, yes, then it is worth something here. I'm like, no, right, that's not how this works.
The exact opposite. If she says, no, Georgette was a real liar in my universe, she's like, well, you can believe me then, because I'm the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're, to be fair, I guess they're not explicitly showing us that the mirror universe, like you're saying, is the opposite of the prime universe.
No.
But
I'm just saying it's inconsistent is the problem.
Yeah, I think it's inconsistent too. But at the same time, they are playing off of, they're using the term mirror universe in like all of the promotional stuff.
Yes.
So they're playing off of the audience's understanding of what the mirror universe is, even though what they're presenting is not that.
Same with, so I'm confused about Lorca, right? Because if Lorca is, Lorca for a mirror universe person fit in extremely well into the prime universe, right? Like, right. He was able to, he met with people he had previously known, and the Admiral gives him the line about, you seem like you're a changed man, but she's not like, you are a raving lunatic who is not the person I used to know. Does that mean that Lorca is a good guy in the mirror universe when we get there? It doesn't seem to be, because in the promotional stuff for the next episode, it seems like he is basically just trying to overthrow Georgiou and become emperor himself. So,
yeah, I don't know. Like, talk about playing the long game.
Yes, another long game in Star Trek.
Yeah, he ends up in the prime universe and decides to just be a good captain.
Although,
for however many months. We
don't know. He doesn't seem that different from whatever happened to, I guess, Prime Lorca could still be alive, right? He could be in whatever got him, whatever got Mirror Universe Lorca over here, could have switched Lorca into that universe, I suppose.
Right.
I don't know. It's just, it's, the storyline here is getting a little bit confusing, but it just feels like there's too many balls up in the air at one time, and it's like, why don't we just focus on one or two and see where it goes?
I have to say, Mirror Universe Lorca learned the ins and outs of commanding a Federation starship very quickly.
Was he not a, what is his role in the Mirror Universe? Is he a
I don't know,
captain?
but I mean like is, well, I guess they kind of did it when they went to I guess you can give it some suspension of disbelief that they can pick up the rules and regulations of these brand new military systems very quickly. Sure,
yes,
whatever.
Burnham certainly does. Yeah, it's just you have to act nice or whatever. It just feels like, I don't know. So we'll skip over to Stamets, I guess, which is the other kind of thing. So Stamets has met his mirror double in the mycelial network.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I don't know if it's the material that he got, but I thought he was terrible in this episode. I thought his acting was really bad.
Just because he's playing
just
off of
general.
Himself or just in general?
Just in general. I thought his whole performance was not good. Everything he did was basically just spouting exposition. So after a while, that's hard to do and have it come off good.
Yeah.
But listening to him talk about this stuff seemed on the level of like one of those information reels they play you in school about like how like a sex ed video kind of thing, where it's like, wait, you're telling me that if blah 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 blah, exactly, Tim, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly
the kind of
right.
video Troy McClure would be in on The Simpsons.
Yes. Yeah. Stamets is stuck in the mycelial world, which is basically purgatory or something at this point. Like, if you die, you go to the mycelial network. And we learn
don't
that...
Don't get me started on that shit.
We learn
continue.
That Mirror Stamets has been doing sort of mirror versions of whatever our Stamets has been doing. He's also been sucked into the network for a while. And either he has been involved, or there's just been a fact that the network is kind of dying. It seems to be rotting on some level.
Mm-hmm.
The Stamets stuff also includes the Culber stuff, which was offensive on the level that the characters themselves didn't seem to be particularly shaken by the fact that one of them was dead in the long run. And on the other hand, is just... His Culber dying is only serves to just inform Stamets of what's happened. Like, he died in order to tell him all the stuff that he doesn't know because he's been separated from the rest of the story.
Also, let's back up a second. Why is he there?
No reason.
Why is he there? There's no reason. There's no reason, like, even space, whatever reason that you could give me that I would believe that that makes sense that he's in there. Unless he is just a projection of Stamets' mind. You know, that kind of thing where it's like, oh, he's the part of Stamets' mind that, you know, knows stuff and that he's the form that he's taking or something like that. But if they are playing the way that they're implying that for whatever reason, Culber is now in there with him, even though he's dead, like, he never interacted with the Spore stuff, right?
No.
Why is he in there?
Why aren't there thousands of other people roaming around?
Why isn't Albert Einstein, like, walking up to him and telling him the secret of the Spore universe? Like, I don't know. Like, it's another thing where it's like, you're just doing this to satisfy your note card thing. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I appreciate that everybody loved the scene that they had together. It was a nice scene. You know, it was a nice emotional saying goodbye scene or whatever. But does it structurally narratively make sense? Not really.
No, it makes no sense at all. How long were they dating? Were they dating for like a week before this guy died? Like, they seem so indifferent. He comes in and he's like, hey, sorry, Paul, I'm dead. No one told you. Let's brush our teeth because that was the happiest time that we ever had together.
I mean, I understand that a little bit because I can understand the sort of like astral plane disconnection to that kind of stuff.
Sure.
That seems to be a way that lots of shows do that, where it's, you know, you meet somebody in the afterlife and they're like, no, I'm dead and I'm totally cool with it. You know, that
right.
Kind of
you become very zen once you're dead.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, so that stuff didn't really bother me too much. I was just more irked by just like, why is he there? And I honestly was kind of when he finally getting out didn't seem to be difficult at all.
No. You just have to see the light through the forest or whatever the guy says and open your eyes.
And then when he did get out, I was almost positive the way that they played it that it was going to be, oh, he's in the wrong body. I thought he was going to be in Mira Stamets' body.
He is, isn't he?
No, I don't think so.
I think he is. I think, I think that good Stamets is on the Karen, the ISS Karen at this point.
See, that's what I thought, but the way that they played it when
Mira Stamets goes, when Mira Stamets, in my opinion, when Mira Stamets goes back and meets Tilly and goes and looks at the fungus garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't feel like, you know, there was no indication there that they had switched, except for the fact that they showed Mira Stamets first.
Yes.
But so, I mean, you know, I hope that's the way they go, because I guess that's at least interesting.
Well, they need, on a narrative level, they need Stamets to be in the mirror universe with Burnham because he needs to get her back.
Right.
So that's my only, and I think it ties into the Stamets portrayals aren't really different from each other. So it's hard to gleam which one went to which place because they're kind of the same person.
I was just going to say, so why don't they give us an indication that that's the case? Why are they saving that?
Right.
Why do they have him play it no differently than he would any other way?
Yeah.
Because when Mira Stamets wakes up, they do play it to us as though, oh, look, it's the Mirror Universe ship. But there's nothing in the way that he wakes up or gets up and starts moving around where he pauses and he's like, oh, I'm in the wrong ship.
Right.
Like, and again.
Oh, that's
sure,
true. He should twist away. Yeah.
But what benefit is it to save that?
No, that's true. He should recognize that he's not back on Discovery. It's a different ship entirely. That's something that's very obvious that I didn't even realize. So, yes, that is weirder than I was kind of imagining that he just went back to where he started and he wouldn't notice the universe being different. But that's totally incorrect.
So again, like let's say we're right and they did switch bodies. Why would you save that? What good does it do to save that later?
It does no good, except it fits with the show's motif of thinking that it's fooling the audience more than it is.
And also, again, also fitting with the way that they handle stuff. If they are saving it, they're not playing fair because of what the stuff we just talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that this is the point where the show should stop, should be giving up on its mysteries. And it gave up on a couple of them. It gave up on Voke and it gave up on the Lorca thing. So I don't know why you'd want to add another one to that point if they even think it's a mystery or whatever.
I like that the mysteries in the show are being referred to as giving up on instead of paying off. Like it's not like they finally got to that point where they paid off. It's like, now they just gave up on it.
Well, it's like if you were throwing a surprise birthday party and the person came early and they saw like the party truck in the yard and they saw you hanging up streamers and they saw people coming in and being like, you know, it's, at a certain point, you just have to be like, yeah, we're abandoning the fact that this is a surprise birthday party. You clearly know what's going on.
Right.
Let's see here. For how short it was, that's really, just, I think we've covered the major things. Was there anything else really that stuck out to you here? There's the Karen. They eat Kelpians. That's nice.
Yeah, that was fun. I like that part. That was pretty good. They don't eat Saru, do they?
No, I believe
because the one she picked looked a lot like Saru. Maybe I'm just being racist towards Kelpians. I don't know.
I actually thought it was Saru too, and I thought she had picked him to save him, and then
yeah.
But I guess she picked the one that they ate. But I don't know.
So, yeah,
they look very similar. And tying into, you know, potential racism, I thought that when the captain at the end was going on about his sister, say my sister's name, I thought he was talking about Michael Burnham.
Oh.
Well, he's clearly not, because he's talking about someone named Ava who we'd never met. But
right,
it was
right.
just my, I was just like, oh, you know, it's my latent racism. I was like, oh, this black man must be talking about the only character that we've known on the show.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it past the show to do that. They've done that on shows before previously.
Yeah. And they've already shown that they're not going to play by, the universes can have differences between them. And also because Lorca had been, they'd already talked about Lorca was in a relationship with Burnham in the mirror universe.
Right, right.
So it's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, that whole thing was creepy as hell.
Yeah.
Where she's like, where George Autet is talking about how Lorca groomed her from when she was a child and then like fell in love with her. Ugh.
Very Woody Allen. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, very ripped from the headlines.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know. I feel like, I guess we can just do final thoughts for the rest of it. So we're going to take a break. We'll play an audio clip. Me and Clay will come back, and we're going to give our final thoughts about vaulting ambition.
But despite my constant guidance and affection, something was still missing. In Lorca, you saw a father. Until you grew up, and it became more.
You're saying Lorca and I?
He groomed you. He chose you.
I did choose you, but not for the reasons you think.
He told you that destiny brought you together.
Different universe, yet somehow the same people had a way to find each other. The strongest argument I've ever seen for the existence of destiny.
He said he'd cross time and space itself to take what was rightfully his.
Apparently the 133 jumps we made filled in the gaps.
Extraordinarily fortunate coincidence.
You're sensitive to light.
Only compared to a human from your universe is the singular biological difference between our two races.
All right, Clay, so 12 episodes down. I think we have 3 left. You know what this episode actually scared me of a little bit? And it ties into a YouTube comment that we had about someone, I think I mentioned this last time, staying in the mirror universe for longer than this season.
Yeah.
I actually feel like that could possibly happen.
Yeah. I my prediction was 3 episodes, and this was the 3rd episode, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would like to think that they're back by the end of the season, but if they're not, I don't know what we're doing here, man.
Like, no.
Another thing that we didn't bring up is the Defiant stuff. all of that shit again happens off screen, where we come back to this episode and they're like, yeah, we decoded that shit, but we can't read it. And then when she's talking to George Au about it, George Au's like, oh, that shit ain't going to help you. All those people went crazy.
Yep.
So it's,
and all the information is redacted on your data pad.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They translated it, but it was all redacted, so they can't read it. So it was worth nothing.
Yep.
And I don't know. It's what's going on? Like, what's the end game here?
I
don't mean that as a in like a positive way, where it's like, oh, I can't wait to see what happens next. I just don't know where the ship is going here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel that the Defiant's only being brought in, I feel, at this point because it had this time travel aspect to it. They've established that the Defiant jumped through time and you can possibly do this. I feel it's becoming more and more likely that they will reset back to the Binary Star timeline. And I don't know. We could be wrong about that, but that would make sense. And the only reason I feel that the Defiant is being brought up continuously is because they know that they can jump to another timeline because it's been established.
Right. So here's a question. Let's say that they do that, right? They jump back to the Battle of the Binary Stars. What, and let's say that's like the end game here. What do they do that makes any of this worth anything? Like, what's the change? Is the change that Burnham is now back on the bridge of the George Au, Shenzhou?
Yeah.
And manages to talk down the Klingons, thus averting the war? I don't know what else there
Tyler
is to do.
Tyler will go back, and because he was half Klingon for a while, he will be able to talk down the Klingons.
sure. Wouldn't put it past them. Yeah.
I'd have the same problem. If they go back to that timeline, I'd have a hard time figuring out what they would do that would alter the course of events at that point, because we have not learned anything about the Klingons from this whole expedition. We haven't learned anything about ourselves. We haven't really learned anything about traveling between universes, besides the fact that it's happening, and it seems that the Spore Network will be destroyed. Although, I still have a hard time rationalizing why no one in the future series ever brought up the Spore universe as, if we know about it. Unless they go back in time, it's destroyed, and they also forget about it. Or they go insane when they come back, who knows.
So, I was thinking about this a little bit. In the Yesterday's Enterprise episode of the podcast that we did, I think I floated the idea of... the prime timeline is actually the skewed timeline, because if you look at the way the events go, things only turn into the next generation timeline because of what happens when the Enterprise C goes back in time.
Yep. Right?
So by that equation, the dark timeline is the prime timeline, and the TNG timeline is actually the alternate timeline.
Yep.
Is it possible that that's what we're seeing? So basically everything we've watched so far is the dark timeline, and then they go back to the Binary Stars and fix everything and turn it into the Star Trek timeline that we all know?
Could be. Or they would just stay... I'm just trying to work out the logic here. Or they would stay... Could they stay in that Yesterday's Enterprise timeline, the dark timeline from that, at some point...
I mean, I was just using that as an example.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
So, like, if we're looking at Discovery, right?
Yep.
If they do end up back at the Battle of the Binary Stars, is it possible? And then they change something. Is it possible that if we go back at the end of the season and look at this, what we actually realize is we've been watching the dark timeline play out, and then the season ends with them going back, fixing something at the Battle of the Binary Stars, thus turning it into the traditional prime timeline.
I would have less of a problem if Enterprise didn't exist. Because, I would be fine if that was, like, the start of the Star Trek universe. Like, you kind of did this universe flip that turned everything into the TNG universe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Enterprise existing before that doesn't invalidate it, but it makes me go, like, it's still not the genesis of everything, because you've already proven that you had that universe beforehand. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's possible. We're just falling into the trap of once you have this many universes, what does anything matter to anybody?
Right. And I guess on a larger point, I'm thinking, does that change? Let's say that happens, right? And you know, at the end of the season ends, and they've everything, you know, they've turned it back to what becomes the prime timeline, and we were in the dark timeline the entire time. Does that change your opinion of the show?
No.
Now seeing the entire story as a piece.
No. I don't think so. I'm wondering if there's anything that they could do for me to come out of the end of this and be like, you know what? That was so well written that I was just blind to the brilliance of how well that was constructed over the course of this time and have it come out that way.
I mean, honestly, you know, we've been pretty hard on the show, and you know, we know that there are a lot of people that are really enjoying it. I would love to get to the end of this and look back and say, Clay, you were being stupid. You should have given the show a chance. You should have seen what they were trying to do, because once you got to the end, you realize, because I'm a big proponent of not judging things and judging stories until you've seen or read the entire story.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing I hate more than, you know, specifically in comics, there's nothing I hate more than people writing something off after the end of the first issue,
you know,
without seeing where the whole thing plays out. So I would be more than happy to come back at the end of the season and go, like, I was wrong to be as negative as I was. These guys actually were really doing something special. But I feel like the problems I have with the show are larger than just that.
Yes.
Right? Yep. I do you feel the same way?
Yes. Because I was trying to figure out why I felt the way I do about the show. And like before Discovery started, I was kind of the opinion that, I think I might have even said something, as long as the aesthetics of the series are there, it's basically a Star Trek show, and you can do a lot with that. Like, you can mold it into things. Mm-hmm. I think that what Discovery's done is showed me that on some level, the core of Star Trek is not necessarily about the Roddenberry ethos of the universe, but it's about, it's not a plot-driven series. It just doesn't sustain itself that way. That's not really interesting to watch, because the show isn't set up to do that. You can't set up a Star Trek series and have a serialized story like this, because the whole strength of the series is based on that kind of character interaction and small little stories that sort of like flesh out everything.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this episode felt the least Star Trek-y out of all of them so far. Mm. It felt very similar. Someone made the great comment, Georgiou looks like the Emperor from Warhammer, basically, which she does. And it felt very Star Wars-y on a lot of ways, not just because she's the Emperor and they're going to the ship and they're going to meet each other. It just felt... it didn't feel very Star Trek-y to me. And Saru is the only character that I would say is a Star Trek character on the entire series.
Yeah, yeah. I still like him. I think he's good. Tilly is kind of episode to episode for me.
Yeah.
I think her performance is good, but I don't know. She seems to be going from ditzy to PhD, like multiple PhD recipient.
And then back again. She was a little ditzy in this episode.
But it's the same for me, where I don't think I would write off the idea that you can do that. I don't think I would say that you can't do Star Trek in a serialized format. I just think you got to take your fucking time.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be this fast. You know, they've done like three seasons worth of plot lines in like 18 episodes.
Yep.
And
this feels, you know, to me very much like a second or third season plotline, and it would be better. You know, like,
yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. Because, I mean,
we know nothing about the status quo of the Federation at this
point. Yeah. Exactly. We talked about that before in the last couple episodes, and even, you know, to an extent here, where the Mirror Universe, those episodes work because you are at a point where you are familiar with the characters and how they act. So when you're presented with the inverse of that, it's, you know, clear.
Yes, it's illuminated. You don't have to, you don't have a mystery as to who is the mirror universe of who going on in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't, we'll see where it goes. But I guess that would be a good point to, we were talking, I think, offline about, like, we should get some, find another Trek channel that's, like, enthusiastic about Discovery, mm-hmm. and just sort of have, like, a conversation that would be, like, a, not a debate, but a discussion to see, like, where we come unaligned with people who like this the show.
Mm-hmm.
That would obviously have to happen after the series is this or the season has ended, because I think we need to reconcile. But if people have a favorite channel or podcast out there that's really enthusiastic about Discovery, and not one that's like affiliated with CBS or like, you know, funded by CBS, a lot of the podcasts are.
Right.
I would be interested in reaching
out
to
by
them.
The same token, CBS, if you want to fund us, we
right, I will.
We will become in the bag for Discovery in a second.
If yeah, I mentioned before there was no way that this series could end on, and I'd be like, wow, that was a revelation. That there is one way that yeah, that could happen. Yeah.
If at the end of the season, if we come back and we give it a glowing review, you know that someone has driven a dump truck of money after
I'll shut down the Patreon, and instead we'll just have a credit from CBS. But yeah, I would be interested in talking to that channel. There's a couple of them out
yeah.
there. I'll reach out to them. But if people know of one, I'd be interested in knowing who they are, because I can't look at the Twitter feed of Discovery after the episode's there, because I don't really understand what's going on.
And, you know, I would just like to say that I personally am not looking for the show to be bad. You know, I think it's really easy to tear stuff down. It's a lot easier to defend stuff, especially when people don't like it. But I'm sort of Fox Mulder-y about it, where I want to believe.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be a skeptic, but I want to see the evidence that this could be great. And for me, it's just not happening. So I don't want to come off like I'm being negative for the sake of being negative. I would really love this for this to be a great show.
And in my opinion, the show is like a C minus. It's not
yeah.
an F. Like although
no, it's not terrible.
Yeah,
no.
As though we rant against it. I think it's more just there's a lot that you can nitpick, and there's not a lot that really elevates it in any way
yeah.
that you could be like, oh, that was really fantastic when they did that. I wish there was some of that stuff, but it's just slightly below average show to me.
Yeah. I would like to think that most of our, well, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking giving us more credit than we deserve, but I would like to think that most of our critique is not nitpicks.
No.
At least not in the way that people usually do that. I feel like most of our stuff is fairly sound.
Yeah, nitpicking to me, because this is it is something that would be a criticism, I think, or that I've heard the criticism, is that nitpicking to me is things that you're picking on sort of incongruities that don't really have an impact on the story at all.
Yeah.
It is not nitpicking. Like, nitpicking details is not nitpicking, because to me, storytelling is all about details. And it's storytelling is about details in the sense that it is both what you include and what you don't include. If you think about the best storytellers that you know in person, the best storytellers in the world know exactly what you don't need to know, because they mm-hmm. don't bog you down with all this useless shit. And they also can focus on the events that are important, so that you don't get lost in the story and unable to tell what's going on. Discovery doesn't do that. Discovery is just this sort of like torrent of stuff that's coming at you, and you have to sort of weave through it. And then you forget by the end of the episode what even started at the start of it. So story, like nitpicking details about the Klingon transformation that goes on, that's not nitpicking in my opinion. That's like a huge part of the story that they're trying to tell, and it makes no sense with the way that they've
right.
done it.
If they had given a lot less screen time to explaining that, then I wouldn't care.
I wouldn't care, right.
You know, I wouldn't, you know, if they just gave it a one-off and were like, well, what we actually did was we peeled the skin off of Ash Tyler and just stapled it on top of Vok. And moving on. If that was all they said, I wouldn't be like, well, this doesn't make sense, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But it's the fact that they've spent so long explaining the process And it just doesn't make any sense. Right. And also, it doesn't seem to be important.
No, it doesn't seem to be important whatsoever. If they, it would be more important if they had never gone into the Mirror Universe, maybe. Because going into the Mirror Universe completely undermined anything that the Klingons were trying to do in the first place. So who knows? Yeah. But that's about it. I think we're done. Let me see here.
Do you think Laurel... Like, do you think Laurel sticks around on the ship? Because I'm just trying to figure out
for future
out, like,
seasons.
What,
you mean?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out like what the point of the Vok thing was. If Vok is gone and if Ash is back to normal, even if he has like flashes of Klingon memories or something, it's like, you know, so what? Like, well, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, yeah, and hopefully it doesn't turn out to be the way that I predicted there, where Ash Tyler has insight now into the Klingon mind and can sort of negotiate with them. That would be terrible. We will see where the show goes from here. But that's it for Vaulting Ambition. You guys can click all the social media links. That'll be down below. Let us know what you thought of the episode, where you think the show is going. You can leave all those comments. You can send emails. The links will all be below. As I said, you can go to patreon.com/thepenskefile to support the show. We had some very kind gifts from listeners, Samuel and Mike, which I appreciate greatly. Thank you very much, guys. That helps with the hosting fees, which just came up. And outside of that, the top patrons, as always, thank you guys for supporting the show. High tier on Patreon are Vincent Adultman, Stephen Cobb, Doug Valkamp, Michael Pond, Bradley Killens, Rune Vendler, Holly McLaughlin, Jay Stanley, Mike Burnett, Matthew N. Ross, Magpie Nest Productions, Ben Douglas, Kyle Barrett, Joint Mango, and Tarek Latif. Thank you very much, guys. Hopefully you're enjoying Discovery at least a little bit. And what the hell's after this? We got 3 episodes left. I think that's about it. We're going to have to see where the show goes from here. But Clay, do you have anything to say before we sign off?
Just again, the collected edition of my book Redline comes out on January 31st. So if you happen to be by a bookstore or a comic book store and see it, pick it up. I'd be much obliged.
And we have Tom Cruise coming out on Real Ripe and Real Rotten. So hopefully that'll come out this week. It might be a little bit delayed, but maybe not too bad. First one up is Cocktail, and then we're going to be watching Risky Business. So you can look forward to those. And otherwise, we'll be continuing with DS9 and continuing with Discovery. Let's see. Do I have any questions for you before we sign off? Does Prime Universe Lorca return to the series? Do we ever see Prime Universe Lorca?
I don't know. Someone's got to be the captain of the ship.
Yeah.
Unless Burnham becomes the captain of the ship.
Yeah, I think Burnham becomes the captain. We see Prime Universe Lorca, who like Rambos in one of the future episodes, and he dies trying to save everybody.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to take a wild guess, I would say if they do end up back at the Battle of the Binary Stars...
He does the opposite. In the Mirror Universe, he's the one that dies. He doesn't kill his entire crew.
Well, I was going to say, that still happens, but the crew that gets killed is all the Mirror Universe versions of everybody. Because if they go back in time, they're not just going to displace... Well, I don't know. It's time travel. They can do whatever the fuck they want. But I was going to say, they're not just going to displace their own mass in the past.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Technically, it would mean there are 2 discoveries or 2 versions of everybody.
Yeah.
So you got to get rid of some of them.
Oh, and another, before we sign off, just one last thing. A lot of useless shuttlecrafting in this series. Another useless shuttlecraft at the start of this, where Burnham and Lorca take a shuttle to the Emperor's ship just because they need time to talk to each other in secret.
Yeah, and she takes the time to put the autopilot on for 30 seconds.
And they seem to be very close to each other, so I'm not sure why they had to do that in the first place, but
yeah,
it's a very odd thing. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening. Clay, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we will be back next week with whatever that episode of Discovery is, but hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Leave us all your feedback. I need to help parse out what we think about Discovery. See ya.